Anchored is a production of the Classic Learning Test, based in Annapolis, Maryland, reconnecting knowledge and virtue. Visit us at cltexam.com.
Hello, and welcome back to the CLT offices. We're glad you're here. Today, we're joined by John S. Pistol, president of Anderson University. If this is your first time listening to us, I'd like to take a little bit of time to explain what Anchored is. This is a podcast where our CEO, Jeremy Tate, engages in conversations with leading thinkers on issues at the intersection of education and culture. We appreciate your feedback, so please rate and review this episode and send any questions or comments to anchored@cltexam.com. For more information on CLT's mission and details about upcoming test dates, head to cltexam.com/get-started. Now, without any further ado, let's get on with the conversation.
Welcome back to the Anchored Podcast, the official podcast of the Classic Learning Test. Today, we have an amazing guest, a well-known college president with an incredible background before. We have President John S. Pistol from Anderson University in Indiana with us today. President Pistol earned his bachelor's degree from Anderson University in 1978. He went on to earn his Juris Doctorate from Indiana University before becoming the deputy director of the FBI. President Pistol began his career with FBI in 1983 and then was appointed deputy director in 2004. President Pistol, what an honor to be with you today.
Well, Jeremy, thank you. It's my honor to join you in this conversation.
So we've had some amazing college presidents on the Anchored podcast. We've connected with a few that were former military, most, I think, coming from a career in academia. I certainly haven't met any coming from a career in law enforcement or being the deputy director of the FBI. I'm excited to hear about this unique journey. But I'd love to start, as we start so many Anchored podcasts, learning a little bit about your academic formation, your education growing up as a young boy.
Yeah, well, I was very fortunate, Jeremy. I was the youngest of four kids, and both my parents were educators. My dad was actually a college professor here at Anderson University. He taught in our school of theology here. And then my mom was a high school psychology teacher. And then my three older siblings, one brother and one sister, went into higher ed, became professors in English and biology. And the other sister became a grade school teacher. And then when she retired from that, became an adjunct here at Anderson. And so I was kind of like the odd one out, me out of the six of us, I practiced law for a couple of years. And so I am a recovering lawyer, and hopefully people don't hold that against me, but it was a good life lesson. And then just coming back into higher ed in a way that I wasn't really on my career path. As you mentioned, I did a little bit of time in federal government. So yeah, different path.
Yeah, amazing. And then during your undergraduate years at Anderson that you kind of got an interest in law, and how did that develop?
Yeah, it was something that I was what we called an American Studies major, a broad 60-hour cross-discipline course of study with a pre-law minor. So I was interested in studying law, and I did well enough to be able to get into law school. And so I wanted to explore that. And so after my 3 years of law school, came back to my hometown of Anderson, Indiana. And after my first year of practice, I thought, boy, I'm not sure I want to do this the next 40 years. And at the same time, I felt like I was admitting I'd made a mistake, which I was reluctant to do, to say, wait a minute, I did 4 years of undergrad, 3 years of law school, a year of practice, and now you're going to do something else? So I looked at other practices in different cities. I met my wife, Kathy, here as a freshman at Anderson University. We got married 5 years later. But she's from Washington, D.C. Her dad was a Church of God pastor, and the Church of God founded the Anderson University in 1917. And so the East Coast had some attraction. And I was always interested in politics, not necessarily running for office, but being involved in government work, I should say, more so than politics. And so, yeah, after my year of practice, I decided to look at some other options. And a year later, long story short, is that, yeah, the FBI offered me an appointment to the FBI Academy at Quantico, Virginia. And so I went there and started almost a 27-year career with the FBI, and then did some other government work before coming here to Anderson.
Well, and again, in 2004, I believe, is that the year you're appointed deputy director?
Yes. So that's the, and just for context, there's about 37,000 women and men of the FBI, only about a third of which are actually FBI special agents. The other two thirds are professional staff, which actually make the organization run efficiently and effectively, as we say in FBI lingo. The FBI director is the only person appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate. So I was, by the time I was appointed deputy director, as the senior career person in the organization.
Okay. And I know that you were serving as deputy director at a really crucial time in America's history. I know that you testified and you were part of the 9/11 commission and heavily involved in security efforts. I'm curious, where were you actually on 9/11? Were you in D.C. on the East Coast?
No, I was actually in upstate New York. I'd worked in New York City for 5 years back in the 80s on a joint organized crime task force with NYPD cops. And so I knew the city, worked it and all that. But I was actually in Syracuse, New York, on part of an FBI inspection team. And we were there to audit and inspect the FBI office in Syracuse. And so I was there, had just met with some media folks early that morning and was on the way to the federal courthouse to meet with the chief judge of the Northern District of New York when there was a report about a small plane hitting one of the Twin Towers. And and then it unfolded from there. And I remember being there with the chief judge when reports that no, it was actually a commercial airliner. And then the second plane struck. So I went to the FBI office, which was in the same federal courthouse.
Okay.
We're standing watching with all the other FBI employees there as the first tower collapsed. It's just surreal. And my first thought was, well, this just changes everything.
Wow.
I had no idea how much it would change our country and my own career trajectory because I had not worked counterterrorism investigations in 18 years in the FBI. Other than one, and a few months later, I was appointed by the FBI director, Robert S. Mueller, as the number two guy in the counterterrorism division, which was greatly expanded, obviously, after 9/11. So it was just a surreal moment for me and everybody.
Yeah. So I've got to ask you, as we transition here to talking Anderson University, I've become convinced, and listeners to the Anchor podcast know this already, that the job of college president may be the very hardest job because you have to be an absolute Swiss Army knife from everything from finances to academia to fundraising to building teams and leadership and morale. And then on top of all of that, you've got to be used to a number of people being upset with you on any given day for reasons that you can't even possibly control.
Yes.
And so I'm amazed when somebody can. Do you feel that your role as deputy director prepared you for your role as president of Anderson University?
Oh, absolutely. In terms of just how to do several things. One is to lead an organization, help lead an organization. I was basically the COO of the Bureau for almost 6 years, which is still a new indoor record in the 100 history of the FBI. It's not a position people stay in for extended periods for reasons. But I also learned a lot from when I was nominated to be the head of the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, and was confirmed by the Senate. I learned after I was asked whether I would be willing to serve that I was the third nominee for the job. I learned that the Senate confirmation process is a real thing. But I thought, well, there's a thankless job, one of the least favorite places working in the U.S. government, and I'm the third nominee. So it was very humbling experience, all those experiences, and then dealing with both Congress and the administration and the traveling public with all the complaints about TSA, that has helped me prepare me for dealing with all the challenges that college presidents deal with. So,
Okay, now if some of our listeners, maybe they're thinking Anderson University, maybe I've heard of that. I think it's in South Carolina or maybe the Midwest somewhere. Maybe they don't know anything about it. What do you say to folks who don't know much of anything at all about Anderson University? What makes it distinct?
Well, I'd say check us out. And either the one in Indiana where I am, or there's a great another school in South Carolina, as you mentioned, which used to be Anderson College, as we did, and then changed to Anderson University maybe 20 years ago. But yeah, we are, I believe we're distinctive, compelling, and relevant in several respects. One, we have the number one nursing school in the state of Indiana. So there's 35 private and public schools that offer nursing programs. We're the number one school. So we're a small Christian liberal arts school that focuses on how can we serve others through our calling, through our profession, whatever that may be. So whether you are a nurse or whether you are a teacher or whether you're an entrepreneur or you're a senior official in the U.S. government, we believe that God has called each one of us to serve and to honor God through loving others and providing needs, addressing needs that are so desperate in our world and our country today. So that nursing is obviously a very obvious one. Mm. We started a national security and cybersecurity majors here, and we received a $1 million grant from the Lilly Endowment, which is, of course, based here in Indianapolis.
That sounds like it might be your personal brainchild. Is there a connection?
Well, I had some input on that. So, yeah. And so we are training, and we're actually hiring student interns for this Center for Security Studies and Cyber Defense. And it's just a wide open field that anybody who graduates with a cybersecurity degree has a job lined up, obviously, beforehand. We also have a great business school, a great seminary school, theology and Christian ministry, great school of education. So there's several areas that we believe are distinctive and compelling for students who want to make a difference in the world and following their own sense of, this is what God may be calling me to.
Can you speak about the kind of the Christian history origins denominationally and then the current Christian identity of Anderson?
Yeah. So the Church of God is actually what they call a holiness movement. And that sounds kind of mysterious and all that. So it's not actually a denomination, but it was founded in the late 1880s, and it's basically what's known as a Wesleyan holiness movement. There's some people might compare it to parts of the traditional United Methodist Church, although there's a number of distinctions, but in terms of a well-known, but it's biblically based and just focused on how can we help transform lives for Christ and the kingdom. So we use Romans 12, 1 and 2 as part of that foundation about Paul talking to the church in Rome about, I appeal to you, sisters and brothers, by the mercies of God, present your bodies as a living sacrifice. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds to prove what the will of God is, good, acceptable, perfect will of God. And so that's what we try to walk with students and advocate for them as they discern how God might be calling them in a way that will make a difference not only in their world, but in the bigger world. And to be open to opportunities that they may never have dreamed of. And the perfect example of that, because I didn't set out to become a college president. I didn't set out to become the head of TSA, a 60,000 plus person organization. I didn't set out to be the deputy director of the FBI. But God opened doors in ways that I believe God can and does do for everybody who's open to and then obedient to how God might be calling.
I'm wondering, Anderson University, on the one hand, Christian liberal arts college. I do want to hear a bit about the core curriculum in just a bit. But you're also, you're leading with programs in cybersecurity and nursing. What is the connection for, somebody to be a great, cybersecurity coder or just being a great nurse and an education that's grounded in the humanities, grounded in the liberal arts?
Yeah. So, and we've been fortunate to have a number of national security distinguished lecture series folks come in, people I was fortunate to work with who have come in, and a couple of those people are cybersecurity experts. One, Matt Olson, was I worked with him at the FBI. He was a Department of Justice attorney, Harvard Law School grad, just brilliant guy. He also became the general counsel for the National Security Agency, which deals with a lot of cybersecurity issues. And he came to campus. And I said, Matt, so what? And all these speakers will meet with classes, our national security, cybersecurity classes, and then to do an open forum where we invite the town and gown of local folks in, donors and things like that. Anyway, I asked him, I said, so Matt, what makes, in your mind, a good cybersecurity person? Because when he left NSA, he co-founded a cybersecurity private firm that provides those services to. And he said, really, John, we're looking for somebody with several things. One, good coding skills. They know they have some basic skills, but he said, we don't worry. We're not looking for this. This person knows anything and everything about cyber because we're going to actually teach them for this particular customer. And things change every day. So good skills. Also good oral and written communication skills. So being able to translate what all the information online to have a conversation with somebody. And then a couple other things, but the other thing that was most significant was integrity, because you could be a brilliant coder and have all this, and I'll step out on a limb and say, you could be Edward Snowden and have all those qualities about knowing how to do things. But then if you don't have integrity, or, you know, you sell your nation's secrets, to the enemy or to the highest bidder or something. And so that's what he said they are looking for. And so that synchronizes just beautifully with our mission. Same thing in nursing, that, yeah, you can go through the motions of treating a patient because you have the technical skills. But when you do it with love and compassion, because you have the love of Jesus in and working in and through you, we believe that makes a significant difference in patient care. And same thing, I should have mentioned engineering, because that's a growth area for us. We have four different engineering degrees, and the same thing. You can know the details, you know how to measure, how to do all these things, how to do experiments. But when you do it with a heart for serving others, for example, the dean of our school, he and his family go to Africa, and he applies his skills to help in remote villages, do some just help in terms of, for example, wells for water and things like that. So it's that type of thing that is, I believe, distinctive, compelling, and relevant.
That's beautiful. I think you'd be the perfect person to ask this question to. And I've asked a number of folks this offline, just kind of thinking about life. But I'm wondering, I view it as a national security threat that we have incredible knowledge right now in the hard sciences, incredible inventions, what we're doing, the way that test technology is, or the technological know-how is growing exponentially every year. But to have all that is in some ways divorced from any kind of moral framework seems very dangerous. As an expert on kind of all these topics, including national security, is that being a little too dramatic, or is that fair to say that there's major risk to disconnect these things?
No, I think you're absolutely right, Jeremy. And it's unfortunate that more people don't have that perspective, because I think we are quite vulnerable as a nation, as people who are not as attuned to the security risks that you learn about every once in a while, that there's been a major company that's been hacked. And it may be through a ransomware attack, which is the most prevalent type of cybersecurity attack right now. It may be a theft of data, maybe just be locking it up until you pay the ransom. It could be like the breach of Sony back several years ago. All their internal documents and emails seized and again, held for ransom. But that whole sense of, and colleges and universities have to be very astute about that, especially the large R1, the research institutions that do classified work for the U.S. government. And they have to have obviously very stringent cybersecurity protocols in place, because there is both the external threat from foreign actors, as we say, foreign governments, but then there's also the cyber criminals who just want to steal information and sell to eyes better. There's also the insider threat, and that's what we saw with Snowden, as I mentioned, when he was a contractor for the government and stole that information. And some of our colleges, universities actually hire professors, postdoc students, others, and provide them security clearance when they shouldn't have that. So there needs to be due diligence done to help protect the research, all the intellectual property that all the R&D has gone into. And then also just making sure that we are protecting our national security secrets, whether artificial intelligence related or, you know, defense related and things like that, just all those different areas that we are at risk of.
I'm wondering, before we get to kind of the final question here in the Anchor podcast, which will be, of course, about the book that has been most formative for you, what are some good next steps if a parent, student is listening to this podcast and they're interested in Anderson learning more? Are there summer programs? Are there campus visit weekends? What would you recommend as a next step for folks listening?
Yeah, I'd say they're always welcome to contact me. It might be a little bit of a delay there, but just go to our website, anderson.edu, and look for the Anderson, Indiana one. We don't have the advertising budget that some other schools do, so there may be some placement above ours. So make sure you look for Anderson, Indiana. Again, small Christ-centered university, about 30 miles outside of Indianapolis, so it's a good job market in central Indiana for folks graduating. And then look at whatever your discipline is. We're also NCAA Division III, 20 men and women sports. We have a great music, theater, dance program, and that's something that has been award-winning also. Our dance team has performed at the Kennedy Center in D.C. It's the smallest school in the country that was selected, won a regional competition, and got to perform at the Kennedy Center. And was on a call earlier today, arranging for a world-renowned orchestral conductor to come to campus, and along with another person who is a concert pianist, all through one of our trustees, and just a great partnership. So that's what we're really about, Jeremy, is how can we leverage our Christ-centered partnerships in a way that enhances the kingdom and advances students' careers as we walk with them and work with them. So check us out at anderson.edu.
Love that. And I'm fascinated for this final question that we always end the Anchor podcast with, because you are kind of a Renaissance man. You have a wide variety of interests that range, of course, from law to humanities, to the hard sciences and cybersecurity. Is there one book, when you think back about your career, that you would describe as kind of most influential for you, most formative?
Yeah, Jeremy, thanks for that question. The one that comes to mind that has been really influential is by Richard Foster, the Quaker pastor who founded an organization called Renovare. Renovare.org, if somebody want to check that out. And it's Celebration of Discipline. Boy, it's been out for at least 30 years. And I read it about 30 years ago. And it was really transformational for me to look at how I can be disciplined in my life, which being an athlete and then being an FBI agent, needing to be in good shape and all that, equating the similarities of being the physical discipline of being in shape with the spiritual disciplines. And he talks about 12 different disciplines of life, that not that we can ever earn grace, but that grace does involve effort, as Dallas Willard, his good friend who passed away several years ago.
Oh, yeah. About. Okay.
So Dallas Willard and Richard Foster have been two of the most influential writers that I have been.
What are some of those disciplines?
Yeah, so they go from anything such as prayer and meditation. I mean, just basic things. Silence, and what does that look like? He actually categorizes them into three different categories: inward disciplines, outward disciplines, and a third category, which I'm drawing a blank on right now. And how you can focus on those. And it's not a cookbook per se of, if you take these ingredients and follow these directions and mix it just right and bake it just right, you'll get this exact outcome, because recognizing how God works in and through each of us uniquely. But it's a great roadmap for going deeper in one's faith, and then how you can best serve. So service is another. So that's one of the outward disciplines: gratitude, generosity, the whole range. So I highly recommend that. And Dallas Willard's got a number of Spirit of the Disciplines, and they work together for years again. So just two great authors.
I do have one follow-up question. Students coming out of K-12 Christian schools, classical Christian schools, sometimes I'll have conversations with parents or even with the students where they're kind of saying, I've been in a Christian school my whole life. I kind of want to go to the big public university. When you find yourself in conversations with families kind of thinking this through, what do you feel like, what is the case to continue a distinctly Christian education?
Yeah, and one caveat with us with Anderson University, unlike some of our other schools, sister schools, we don't require incoming students to sign a faith statement. We don't require you to say, I believe A through Z without question. We want students to, and particularly perhaps those who have been in Christian K through 12 and been told, here's what you believe and all this in some instances, not all, and for them to explore their faith here. So we want them to look at what does the Word of God mean to them individually as opposed to what it meant to their parents or to their teachers, to explore their faith so they can go deeper and make that their personal faith. And there's some risk in that, frankly, because some may say, you know what, I've been in K through 12 Christian schools. I'm done with that. I've explored it here. But our professors and our professional staff are so attuned to walking with and working with students from a whole range of faith backgrounds, including some with no faith background. So we really try to demonstrate the life and love of Jesus by saying, we will walk with you. We will work with you as you allow us to. And then we will discern with you how God may be calling you.
I really love that response. It reminds me of something Robert George said. He spoke at our event in Annapolis this past August. And one of the things he said was that the job of the educator is to unsettle the settled beliefs of students. And that could be unsettling the settled beliefs of an atheist or agnostic student and making a case for Christianity or for at least theism. But also it could be unsettling the beliefs of believers in the hopes that they will more fully embrace the faith as their own, right, and not just the faith that they've inherited from their parents. I think that because that's the beginning. That's real faith then. Again, we are here with the president of Anderson University in Indiana, President John S. Pistol, who is also, again, former deputy director of the FBI, of course, head of the Transportation Security Agency as well. President Pistol, thank you for the work you're doing, leading a great American, a great Christian university there in Indiana. Students, parents, definitely check out Anderson University.
Thank you, Jeremy. Be well. Blessings.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Anchored. If you enjoyed it, be sure to subscribe and share it with your friends and colleagues. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.